chisels the better part of a night to cause such damage, he thought wonderingly. A crew of workers and masons, coated in grey stone dust, with handkerchiefs tied around their mouths and noses, carried stones to the hole, watched over by a short, stocky man, who barked orders and curses at them as they worked. Alesh approached the man.
Sir?
Not now, the man snapped, without turning. Can't you see I'm working? Go beg somewhere else, boy.
Alesh started to speak, but coughed as a gust of wind blew stone dust in his face, quickly making him understand the need for the handkerchiefs. He spat in a useless effort to rid his mouth of the dry, clinging taste, then tried again.
Sir, I'm not—
The headman swung around angrily.
Listen, damn you.
He took in Alesh's fine, though disheveled, clothes and frowned.
Just what kind of night-cursed street urchin are you, boy? Listen, if you really want some pay, why don't you help the lads there bear those stones over to that big damned hole in the wall? Big bastard like you shouldn't have any problem with the work, and we've got to get the blasted thing patched up before nightfall, else those fucking devils will pass through it as easily as Jake there.
He gestured at a skinny worker.
Passes through a horse, sir.
Alesh interrupted before the man could finish. I'm no beggar. I was sent here to make sure the work was done well by my master.
Your master? The man sneered. And who might that be? No, let me guess. That damned Osgard. Well, you just tell the official inspector that he's not cheating me on this deal unless he wants to be inspecting an army of nightlings instead of stuffing his face with cakes and sweetmeats. Shit, I'll show them the way. Fact is, we've already agreed on the price, and I'm in to have it, even if I have to carve it out of his fat arse.
The crew leader turned back to the workers, alas, already forgotten.
Get it moving, you lazy lout! Why, I could have hired a few good street girls and had it done in half the time, with twice the fun.
Alesh could have made a point of that. There were other masons, after all, and the crew leader could bluster as much as he wanted. That didn't change the fact that, if Osgard chose to, he could make the man's life difficult in the future. But he didn't, partly because he wasn't there to trade threats with the man, only to see the work was done properly, but mostly because he was right. Osgard did love his sweetmeats and cakes. The bulging stomach that caused the castle tailor such grief was proof of that, and what's more, the man was a bastard. When he stayed at the castle, the official inspector always complained about the servants and the food, though that didn't stop him from eating it, of course, or from goosing the servant girls when they brought him his meals. Look, Alesh said, grabbing the crew leader by the shoulder and turning him back, trying to keep his tone cordial despite his rising annoyance. It had been a long damn day, and this man wasn't making it any easier. I wasn't sent here by the official inspector. Chosen Olliman sent me. He saw at once that it was the wrong thing to say. The man's eyes shrank to narrow slits, and his lips compressed into a thin, white line.
Ah, it's the nightling orphan. And just what does our honourable protector want with a couple of simple stone workers? He asked with a sneer.
The emphasis on protector was slight, but it was enough to make it plain what he thought of the job Olliman was doing. Alesh started to speak, but bit back the scathing words before they came. There'd been a time, not long ago, when men like the bullying crewmaster would have thought themselves lucky and thanked the gods if given a chance to clean the Chosen's boots. But that was before the nightlings came, before people started dying. Alesh took a slow, deep breath. Then,
I was sent to make sure that you didn't need any help. Is that so? The man asked.
He smiled, but there was no humour in it.
Well, I suppose we do at that. You see, lad, he said, gesturing to a cart that had been stacked high with large stones. That there is a lot of rock.
Alesh glanced between the man and the pile.
Just see that the wall is finished and done well, the Chosen had said.
He reflected bitterly how, once again, the Chosen had managed to find a way to have him completely exhausted and worthless before his training session with Kale.
Well? The man asked. You gonna help or not?
Alesh sighed.
I'll need a mask.
Chapter 8
He stumbled through the castle hallways, too tired to care about the strange looks the guards and the other servants gave him. His arms and legs felt like lead weight, and his clothes and skin were so covered in dust that he looked like some corpse freshly risen from the grave. He'd thought to clean himself first, but upon arriving at the castle, one of the other servants had told him, in between frowns at the state of his clothing, that the Chosen wanted to see him immediately. He'd put off going only long enough to take a drink of water, in a wasted effort to clear some of the stone dust out of his mouth. Mask or not, he felt as if he'd spent the last hour gargling the stuff, and with each swallow his throat felt as if it was coated in sanding paper. Still, despite his fatigue, and having spent the better part of the day being chased by a mob of drunks or shouted at by the crewmaster in ever more creative and confusing curses, he felt good. The wall was repaired, and surely, once he saw his condition, the Chosen would call off training for the day. After all, he'd performed the man's errands, hadn't he? Had gone out of his way, in fact, to do so. If he'd needed any reminder of that, then the sharp pain that lanced up his back with each step would have served admirably. Eventually, his legs shaking and threatening to give out underneath him, Alesh arrived at the enclosed courtyard that the Chosen reserved for his own training, as well as that of his apprentice. Two guards were posted on either side of the door, and they grinned when they saw him.
"Ah, it's Alesh," one of them said. "Almost didn't recognize you."
Alesh frowned at the man, too tired to speak, and after a moment, the guard opened the door, and Alesh stepped past the grinning men and into the courtyard. The Chosen and Kale were seated on the ground, their eyes closed as they both performed the meditation exercises the Chosen was so fond of.
"Ah," the old man said, his eyes still closed. "I see that you have decided to join us after all, Alesh."
"Yes, sir," he said, panting. "I'm sorry I'm late."
"That's enough meditation for now, Kale," the Chosen said, opening his eyes and rising to his feet with a fluid grace that belied his years. The nobleman mimicked him, studying Alesh from behind the Chosen with a cruel grin.
"I'm sorry I'm late, sir," Alesh said, doing his best to ignore the apprentice. "But I did as you asked. I gave the
How does the wall fare?" the Chosen asked, cutting him off.
It's finished, sir."
"That is good. Now, I believe that we will train your hand-to-hand combat skills today, Kale." The nobleman's grin grew wider.
"Sounds good to me."
The Chosen frowned and turned to regard him with an icy stare.
"Sir,"
Kale added with a frown, darting an angry look at Alesh as if he'd done something.
"Very well," the Chosen said after a moment. "Let us begin.
Alesh, come forward."
"But, sir," he said.
The Chosen turned that cold stare on him, and he swallowed hard.
"In truth, I don't think I'd be much help in his training just now. I can barely stand."
"Nonsense," the old man said with a smile. "You appear to be getting along well enough to me. Now, come. There isn't much time left in the day." Alesh fought down a sigh and shuffled forward, wondering if maybe he wouldn't have been better off if the Chosen had left him in the street that day so long ago. Probably dead, but maybe better off. Kale strutted toward him with his familiar, arrogant walk, and Alesh watched him come with a weary resignation. He was so tired that he could barely stand, and he was about to spar with a man who murderers would have said was a little rough for their tastes. Alesh supposed he should be grateful. After all, at least the Chosen had picked hand-to-hand training, instead of deciding Kale needed to work on his strikes, an exercise that left Alesh frantically struggling to keep a wooden practice sword at bay with a shield, without having any weapon of his own, forced to dodge and block, without being allowed to strike back.
"Remember," the Chosen said, regarding Kale, "we are only here to practice."
The nobleman nodded quickly, eager to be about it.
"And so he would be," Alesh thought bitterly. "He hasn't spent all day in the poor district hauling stones like a damned pack mule."
"No," a voice inside him said. "He hasn't, but he was in the poor district, wasn't he? And just what was all that about, and who was that man with him? You know him from somewhere, don't you?"
"I don't know, and I don't care," Alesh thought back. He was too tired to care.
Whatever Cale had been doing in the poor district could wait for tomorrow, for when his body didn't feel like he'd been run over by a horse cart instead of only almost run over, and his mind didn't feel full of cotton, his thoughts fuzzy and unclear.
"Begin,"
the Chosen barked, and Cale waded forward in a flurry of lightning-fast blows. The years of training had left Alesh with more bruises and aches than he could count, but they had made him good at avoiding being hit. It was more instinct than anything else that allowed him to dodge the man's first strike and block the next several. Cale stepped forward again, pressing the attack, and Alesh moved to the side, but his left leg threatened to buckle from exhaustion, and the nobleman's fist took him hard in the stomach. He let out a grunt and fell to one knee as the air left him in a whoosh. He saw the apprentice moving closer, his fist drawn back.
"Cale?"
The apprentice stopped, reluctantly, gazing at Alesh with a feral expression reminiscent of a half-starved dog gazing at a plate of freshly cooked roast. All well enough if you were the dog, maybe, but certainly not the way the cow had planned on his day turning out. The Chosen came to Alesh, grabbed him by the shoulders, and pulled him to his feet.
"I know you're tired, Alesh," he whispered. "But evil will not wait for you to be rested. It will come when you least expect it, from where you least expect it."
He paused at that, and his eyes got that distant, far-off look that he seemed to get more and more of late. After a moment, his gaze snapped back to the present.
"You must try harder," he said,
in a voice so low that Alesh could barely hear him.
"They are all counting on you."
Alesh frowned at that, sure that the words hadn't been meant for him, but for the Chosen himself. How far gone to grief must the man be if he was talking to himself without realizing it? The thought of all that the Chosen had been through, all that he had sacrificed, made a fresh stab of pity and guilt go through Alesh, and he nodded, forcing his weary back to straighten.
"I'm ready."
The Chosen met his eyes, studying him intently. Then he nodded in return.
"Yes, you are."
Then, louder.
"Again?"
Chapter 9 Alesh lay awake in his small bed, his various aches and pains competing for his attention. He'd done the best he could against Cale, which was to say that he had tried his best to keep the time between when the apprentice knocked him down and when he stood up so that he could do it again to a minimum. He supposed he could take some consolation in the fact that Cale's fists would probably be sore in the morning from all the abuse they'd taken. His mind drifted back to the girl, to the soft melody she'd played, to the way it had seemed after a time that he hadn't heard the music at all, but felt it, in the way a man could feel a cool breeze against his face, or the warm kiss of sunshine against his skin, of the way her eyes had glowed in the lantern light, shone like emeralds. He felt his eyes close almost of their own accord. Her and the music, so soft and warm. Darkness rushing past. The horses panting in fear and exhaustion. His mother's voice screaming. A shock, the sound of wood cracking, and the feeling of flying, toppling end over end in the cart, his head striking the inside of the wagon hard enough to make stars dance in his eyes. Then again and again, pain in white, hot starbursts. And then another hit, harder this time, and only darkness. Waking to the taste of blood in his mouth, his head throbbing. Silence, at first. Then a faint scrabbling that grew louder until it wasn't scrabbling at all, but clawing, tearing. A growl so deep, so powerful, that it seemed to run through him. The sound of wood splintering and being torn apart. The door of the compartment flying free in a shower of splinters that struck his face and arms. The stars overhead, distant and weak. Then the stars are blotted out, and something is reaching through the opening. Then not reaching through at all, but through already. A claw grabbing him, trying to tear him out of the wagon, and he's fighting, fighting against it.
"Alesh, relax, son."
Father?
He asked, his voice thick and muddled. He opened his eyes and saw that he was no longer in the darkness, no longer in that tomb-like cart along the roadside, but back in the servants' quarters, lying in bed and covered in the cold, clammy sweat of his own fear. not his father standing over him, but the Chosen himself. A lantern burned weakly on the room's nightstand, and the Chosen's eyes seemed to blaze in the fitful light, twin orbs of blue fire dancing in the near darkness. The Chosen standing over him, with the dream still clinging to him so close and so real, nagged at his memory. He was transported to a time long ago, reminded of a boy, half mad with grief and pain, shuffling, deaf and dumb to the world around him. He felt again the hard slap of a soldier as he drew too close to a procession working its way through the streets, witnessed once more as a man stepped down from the carriage, scolding the soldier, then turning to him, crouching low, asking him his name. The same man, the same eyes, but where once those eyes had held confidence, had held faith, now they held grief, doubt. And there, so deep as to be nearly hidden, madness?
Gods, no. Please, not that.
Sir, is it you?
You still dream of them. Not a question. In the glow of the lantern, the Chosen looked shrunken somehow, beaten. And more than any other time since Alesh had known him, Brent Olliman looked all of his 98 years. It was as if the gift of Armidan, the gift that had endowed him with a longer lifespan than normal mortals, had been stripped away from him. Alesh took in the Chosen's weary expression, the dark circles under his eyes, the way his hands, always so sure, so graceful in their movements, now shook with small but perceptible tremors. Before him was not the great warrior who had led Armidan's six into battle against the Nightling hordes, nor the living legend who had met Argush in battle, casting him down and slaying him with the power of his god, but a man whose death was so close that he could taste it, could smell it, a smell like rotting roses and dust, like the memory of fine things turned to ash. Alesh hadn't yet been born during the War of Darkness, but he'd heard the story a thousand times, how the man had glowed with a golden light, how even his breath had come out in vapour the colour of the sun. It was said that the night's creatures had cowered and fled at the approach of High Priest Olliman, leader and greatest of Armidan's Chosen. Now, the man looked as if he could barely keep his head upright, and in his face Alesh saw something that sent chills running through him. Fear.
Sir?
He asked, a knot of uncertainty coiling in his stomach.
Has something happened?
Something, the old man muttered, staring at the small window. But what?
What?
The last word came out as little more than a growl, and Alesh swallowed hard. Since he'd known him, the Chosen had always seemed in complete control, but now...
Not madness.
Not madness.
I have called, the Chosen growled, but he hasn't answered. Why?
Sir?
Alesh asked, sitting up in bed.
Why?
The Chosen demanded, but he wasn't speaking to Alesh any more. His eyes had got that distant look, as if he stared into a world only he could see, and Alesh felt goosebumps rise on his arms and chest.
Sir, he said, I don't understand.
Suddenly, the Chosen's eyes snapped back into focus, and he turned back to Alesh.
It started, he said,
with a ringing finality that made the knot of fear in Alesh's stomach grow bigger.
I thought that there was more time. Armidan, help me, I thought there was more time. Oh, Simeon,
he moaned, his voice so low that Alesh could barely make out the words.
What have I done?
Alesh was just about to rise and go for a healer, sure that the Chosen was having some kind of fit, when the old man spoke again.
We have been fools. I have been a fool.
He sighed, then,
never mind that.
Tell me, my son, did you deliver the message?
He nodded.
Yes, sir.
The Chosen nodded.
Good. That's good.
Alesh was relieved to see that some of the old surety had come back into the man's voice.
There might still be time yet.
Time, sir?
Alesh asked uncertainly. The old man nodded thoughtfully, now fully back to his old self.
Thank you, Alesh, for listening.
I am sorry for disturbing you so late at night. It is just that it is a burden at times. Such a burden.
He paused, then shrugged as if it didn't matter.
But it remains my burden still. At least for a time. Good night, Alesh. Sleep well.
As if I can sleep now, he thought,
as he watched the Chosen grab the lantern and head for the door.
Good night, sir. Hamidan, watch over you.
The Chosen turned back and smiled at that, but there was little humour in it. Hamidan, watch over us all. He stood there for a second, without speaking. Then, you have become a good man, Alesh. Your father would have been proud of you. I am proud of you. Alesh opened his mouth to speak, but his throat was suddenly impossibly tight, and in another moment the Chosen was gone, and he was alone. He lay awake for some time, disturbed and more than a little afraid, but eventually the toils of the day took their toll, and he drifted towards sleep once more. It wasn't until sleep was nearly upon him that he realized he'd once again forgotten to tell Ahriman about the bloody knife he'd found. In the morning, he thought to himself, his mind already foggy with sleep. In the morning. Chapter 10
Shh! Alesh, wake up!
He groaned and turned on his side, covering his head with his arm. He'd spent most of the night lying in bed worrying over the Chosen's words like a dog with a bone before exhaustion had finally had its say, and his eyes felt heavy and grainy.
Come on already,
the voice insisted.
Abigail is waiting on us.
The owner of the voice tugged insistently on his arm, and Alesh finally decided that he'd slept all he was going to and sat up.
Sonia stood watching him, fidgeting excitedly.
Whoa, all right, I'm up. He mumbled.
What's all the excitement about?
The little girl rolled her eyes.
It's fair day, Alesh, remember? Corin told Abigail that you were planning on going, so she said we could all walk into the city together.
Her face bunched up in thought.
She also muttered something about men only thinking with their business ends, but I don't think she was talking to me. Why does your face look like that, Alesh? Does your tummy hurt?
Here, in the daylight, with Sonia dancing from foot to foot in excitement, the late-night conversation with the Chosen lost some of its hold on him. The cold, creeping fear that had been building in him faded like morning mist, and he found himself struggling not to laugh.
No, little one. My tummy is fine. Just let me get dressed.
The little girl fidgeted restlessly as he pulled on a shirt and his boots.
Can we go now, Alesh? Can we, please?
He nodded.
All right, let's go.
Abigail was waiting for them in the hallway. The short, squat woman wore a blue dress instead of her usual white cook's one, and her brown and grey hair hung loose, one of the few times Alesh had ever seen it so, both concessions for the holiday.
Mother Abigail,
he said, giving his best imitation of a nobleman's courtly bow,
you look enchanting this morning.
Sonia giggled and Abigail frowned, though he could see the smile in it.
Don't you tease me, boy. Not unless you fancy the idea of spending tomorrow scouring pots and mopping floors.
Alesh grinned and bowed again.
I am, of course, at Madame's service.
The head cook rolled her eyes.
Well, come on, then. Let's get this over with.
She turned grimly, one hand holding Sonia's, and marched down the hall like a woman heading toward her own execution, and determined to meet her end with as much dignity as she could muster. Feeling better than he had in days, Alesh followed after her. It wasn't until they were outside, in the courtyard, that he came to an abrupt stop.
"What is it, boy?"
Abigail asked. Alesh winced, remembering that he'd meant to tell the Chosen about seeing Kale in the poor district.
"And the knife. The damned knife.
I forgot. I need to tell the Chosen something—"
"Oh, no, you don't,"
the woman interrupted, one hand on her hip, as she wagged a finger at him.
"You're not going to find an excuse to spend the day in that library with your head stuck in a book. You know as well as I do that Chosen Ahriman would want you to have some time for yourself. Besides, he hasn't been out of his quarters yet, and you know what that means."
Alesh nodded reluctantly. As high priest to Amidan, the Chosen often spent hours praying to his god. Sometimes entire days would pass without him ever leaving the private altar connected to his quarters.
Still, he hesitated, it wouldn't take long.
Abigail frowned at him.
Now you just listen to me, Alesh. You might be a grown man now, but if you don't stop acting a fool, I'm going to walk right back in the castle and come back with my spoon. You do remember my spoon, don't you?
Alesh swallowed. Yes, ma'am. She nodded, satisfied.
As well you should. You've always been a good boy, Alesh, a smart boy, but there have been times when I think Amidan himself would have lost patience with you.
He smiled, and they started forward again, Sonya skipping ahead of them, full of excitement and expectation as only the young can be. Not me, though, Alesh thought as he watched her. His childhood had been shorter than most. The creatures had seen to that. Was I really so difficult? He asked of the head cook, as he watched the young girl playing in her own world, a world of magic and enchantment, one where good men never grew old, and old men were never murdered in their homes, their hearts torn from their chests. She snorted.
That's a noble with a toothache.
He laughed at that, and was surprised to find that, despite his misgivings, he was excited for Fair Day. Excited, at least, until he remembered that he'd promised Corin he'd meet Lady Uriel's cousin, and, with such a meeting looming, he thought that the day could only end in disaster. He had no idea, then, just how right he was. Chapter 11 Once in the city, Alesh was amazed at the crowds that surged around them. People of all ages, from all walks of life, flooded the streets, examining the wares at the dozens of merchant stalls lining the street. Shopkeepers and vendors shouted to be heard over the din, advertising wares ranging from the practical to the ludicrous, and the smells of dozens of foods and spices drifted in the breeze, almost thick enough to touch. They walked for a time, Sonya gawking with wide eyes and frequently tugging on Abigail or Alesh's sleeves, guiding them to some new marvel or trinket that caught her eye. Abigail scolded her for acting like a chicken with its head cut off, but Alesh saw her smiling after the little girl when she thought no one was watching. They passed merchants selling jewellery and clothes ranging from plain, inexpensive tunics and trousers to those, if the sellers had their way, that were worth a small fortune. They walked by another stall where a heavy-set woman was selling a tonic that she swore would keep a woman thin no matter what she ate, and Alesh was still marvelling at the irony of it, when they came upon a thin man that looked to be in his 50s, who was currently engaged in assuring an elderly woman that the charms he carried would ward off any nightling, great or small, and hers today for the paltry price of a single gold sun. A paltry sum, he claimed, when held against one's life, or the lives of her loved ones. Alesh glanced at Abigail, and saw that the head cook's hands worked as if she wished she'd brought a wooden spoon with her, and before he could consider stopping her, she stepped up to the thin man, a scowl on her face. Alesh groaned inwardly. He recognized the look on her face. Any of the castle's children would have, and, seeing it, they would have known that the only course of action was to run. The poor man, though, had not seen the look before, and did not know what it portended.
"Charms, are they?"
Abigail asked, interrupting the man mid-sentence.
"Guaranteed to frighten off the night's creatures."
The man smiled, revealing sharp, badger-like teeth, as he saw the opportunity for another sale.
"That's right, ma'am," he said, nodding reassuringly. "Why, one of those big old nasties wouldn't think to come close to you if you were wearing one of these. And you can have one for the paltry sum of—"
"I wonder," Abigail said,
"just how many of those big old nasties you faced down with one of those trinkets? Just how many nights have you spent outside the walls, sleeping peacefully, while the night walkers cowered in their holes, scared to come near you?"
The man fidgeted uncomfortably.
"Well, ma'am, only a fool would spend a night outside the city on purpose, but things happen."
He glanced back at the old woman with the cane, apparently deciding his time would be better served there.
Why, sometimes I like to visit my grandchildren, you know. They live in Dale with their mother, and I'm not ashamed to admit that I can't always afford to hire a lightbringer for the journey. So, instead, I always carry one of my charms to protect... What are their names?
Abigail interrupted. The man frowned at her.
Names, ma'am?
The head cook nodded, crossing her arms over herself.
Your grandchildren? What are their names? Listen, ma'am, I don't really see what that has to do with...
No, you wouldn't, would you?
Abigail said, shaking her head.
You ought to be ashamed of yourself, boy, making a living off of people's fear.
Despite the fact that the man looked of an age with Abigail herself, his face turned red, and his gaze fell to the ground like any scolded kitchen servant.
Abigail?
Sonia asked as she walked up, returning from a nearby stall with two honey cakes in her small hands.
What's wrong?
The head cook's scowl disappeared immediately, and she turned to the little girl with a smile.
Nothing's wrong, sweet one. Come on. I hear there's to be a show in the town square. Doesn't that sound nice?
She turned and frowned at the merchant.
I think I've had my fill of shopping for now.
The old merchant didn't bother trying to hide the relief on his face. The little girl's eyes lit up.
A show? Can we go, Abigail? Please, can we?
Of course, child, of course. Come on, why don't we head there now? I imagine it'll be starting before too much longer.
She turned to Alesh.
And you'd better be going to meet Corin, if you've a mind to.
Alesh glanced at the sun and winced. He'd been so distracted by the crowded streets and all of the different things going on around him that he'd nearly forgotten.
You're right, he said with a sigh. I need to go. You two have fun. I'll see you later.
He turned to go, and Abigail stopped him with a hand on his arm.
Have a good time, Alesh,
the old woman said with a smile.
And try to keep that Corin out of trouble.
I'll try, ma'am. You know how he is.
She sighed.
Yes, I do. I know how both of you are.
She pulled him into a quick hug, then turned and headed down the street, shouting after Sonia. Alesh watched her go, her bun of grey hair already coming undone, the hairs trailing behind her as she pushed her way through the crowd, her face set in its usual no-nonsense expression, and he couldn't help from grinning. She'd only gone a short distance before she looked back, saw him still standing there, and waved him on with a shooing gesture. Alesh grinned and waved back, but the head cook had already disappeared into the sea of people. It was the last time he saw her alive. Chapter 12 First bell had come and gone by the time Alesh arrived, out of breath and sweating, to the dancing maid. It didn't take long to spot Corin and the two women. The tavern was close to the poor quarter, and was filled with a loud, boisterous crowd of commoners dressed in plain linens and homespun. The two noble women, in their bright silk dresses, their ears, fingers and neck adorned with expensive jewels, their hair done up in a way that Alesh thought must have taken at least two or three sets of hands, stuck out like peacocks among chickens, which, he supposed, was the point. He looked down at his own servant's whites, and felt his face heat.
Gods, what am I doing here?
He was just about to turn and leave when Corin glanced over, saw him, and waved him over with a grin. Alesh bit back a curse and walked to their table, clasping Corin's hand.
I didn't think you were going to make it, the big guard said.
Alesh shrugged.
Abigail insisted. She said that someone has to keep you out of trouble.
Corin sighed. Poor man, he said, winking at Lady Uriel, who giggled behind one white-gloved hand.
You were doomed from the start.
They all laughed at that, and Corin slapped himself on the forehead.
Where are my manners, Alesh?
He said, indicating the noble lady sitting beside him.
This is the intoxicating Lady Uriel, and this, he said, nodding his head at a thin, delicate-looking woman sitting across from them, is Lady Isabel, Lady Uriel's radiant cousin.
The two women giggled, blushing prettily.
How does the bastard do it?
Alesh thought, sitting down at the table. If he'd said something like that, he'd have been lucky to get away with a curse and a red cheek,
and just as likely to get the city guards called on him.
It's a pleasure to meet you both.
Tell me, Alesh,
Lady Uriel said, fingering a diamond necklace that hung at her throat, just in case anyone had missed it.
Is Corin always so charming?
His friend's grin widened.
Yeah, Alesh, am I?
Alesh considered having to suffer through another night of being told how great his friend was. Then an idea occurred to him, and he only just managed to keep himself from grinning. Instead, he leaned forward, a serious expression on his face.
Yes, ma'am, most always, except when he wakes from one of his nightmares.
Corin opened his mouth to speak, but the noblewoman beat him to it.
You have nightmares, sweetling?
She asked, running a hand down the big man's cheek.
Why, that's so terrible.
Alesh nodded, ignoring Corin's scowl.
It is indeed, my lady. Has them most every night, in fact. I'm sure he would have mentioned it, but,
well, you know how brave our Corin is. He doesn't like to make a big fuss over himself.
The noblewomen both looked at Corin, something like adoration in their eyes, and Lady Uriel nodded.
He is the bravest man I've ever met.
Still, she said, waving an admonishing finger at him,
you should have told me about this, Cory. Maybe I could help somehow. Are they about your time as a soldier? I'm sure it must have been terrible, all that. No, ma'am,
Alesh interrupted.
He never dreams about that time. At least, that's what he tells me. No, his nightmares are about something far stranger.
Look, Corin said, frowning.
I don't... Hush now, sweet Cory,
Lady Uriel said, putting a delicate finger over his lips.
Let your friend tell us. I know that you would never admit to any weakness, and I don't think you any less of a man for having nightmares. Now, she said, turning to Alesh, tell us, please, Akresh, what terrible dreams plague him so? Yes, do tell us,
Lady Isabel said in a soft, not unpleasant voice. Alesh noted that the two noblewomen were leaning forward in their seats now, their breath held in anticipation.
Forgive me, my lady, he said, but it's Alesh. Anyway, it is terrible, truly. You see our Cory here?
He had to pause for a second at that, fighting the laughter down.
Well, he does not dream of his time as a soldier, or of the nightlings, as so many people do. No, he is plagued by dreams of...
He paused for effect, and the two noblewomen looked as if their eyes would pop out of their heads in expectation.
Dogs.
A pause, then the slightest raising of a perfectly trimmed eyebrow.
Dogs?
Alesh nodded, his expression solemn.
Well, puppies, really.
The two women recoiled for a moment before they realized what he'd said. Then they frowned.
Forgive me,
Lady Uriel said uncertainly.
It sounded as if you said puppies.
Oh, yes,
Alesh said gravely, noting the murderous glare his friend was giving him out of the corner of his eye.
But not just any puppies. No. These puppies are more dangerous than any blade or tawny spear could ever be. Sure, they look cute and cuddly, but that's only a disguise, a clever ruse that they use to lure people in.
Oh, I see,
Lady Isabel exclaimed, a self-satisfied smile on her face.
They aren't really puppies at all, are they? No, they're actually...
She leaned forward, whispering the last, in the hushed tone a child might use.
They're nightlings.
Alesh considered this for a moment, then shook his head.
No, my lady, at least I don't believe so. Still, I woke him up one time while he was having the dream, and that was about as close to death as I dare to come. Why, he about strangled the life out of me before he came fully awake, and you know how strong our Cory is.
The noblewoman frowned and ran a delicate hand through her long black hair.
Then why?
Corin cleared his throat.
I think it's about time we got going, don't you? Otherwise we'll miss the entire fair day. Why don't you two ladies wait outside? Alesh and I will settle up with the barkeep for the drinks.
The two women glanced uncertainly to each other. Finally, Lady Uriel nodded.
"Of course, Corey."
She patted him softly on the arm, as if she'd just heard he'd been the victim of some terrible accident and was scared to hurt him.
"Come, Isabel."
The women rose and left, leaving Corin scowling at Alesh across the table.
"That was a bastardly thing to do."
"Bastardly? What do you mean?"
Alesh asked innocently.
"My friend, I'm here for you, all right? We're all here for you in your time of need."
Corin frowned at him for a second longer, then broke into a loud fit of laughter. After a moment, he wiped his hand across his face and sighed.
"I told you I'm not scared of puppies. I just don't like them."
"Oh," Alesh said. "My mistake."
He paused, then,
"Explain to me again how anyone doesn't like puppies.
That's like saying you don't like sunshine or happiness. As far as I know, happiness doesn't shit and piss everywhere and leave me to clean it up."
Alesh nodded at the four empty tankards sitting on the table in front of Corin.
"The way you drink, I'd think you'd be used to that."
Corin rolled his eyes and stood, swaying slightly.
"Come on, you bastard. Let's go and pay for the drinks. I've got a lot of work to do if I plan to rob Lady Uriel of her virtue tonight after your help."
Alesh grinned and clapped his friend on the back as they headed toward the bar.
"If what I hear is true, I'm surprised she has any left."
Corin barked a laugh at that.
"Well," he said, as he counted out two dawns to the bored-looking barkeep, "there's only one way to find out. That is, if I can now, thanks to you." "Oh, quit your complaining. If anything, you should be thanking me. This way you won't have to look for a reason to get her to leave. I seriously doubt she'll want to stay over and risk you having one of your puppy dog dreams." "Knight, you're a bastard," his friend muttered. "Still, you're probably right. Come on, let's try to show the women a good time."
Alesh nodded with a smile.
"Lead the way, Corey."
Chapter 13 They spent half of the day walking through the city, stopping here and there to watch jugglers or musicians plying their trades along the sides of the street, or to let the two noble women browse the racks of dresses, scarves, and other garments at some of the tailors' booths. Lady Isabel was pretty, as Corin had said, and she seemed smart enough. She even tried to initiate several conversations with Alesh, but he found himself distracted with thoughts of the woman from the night before.
Catherine. Her name was Catherine.
"Stop being a fool," he told himself.
"You saw what she did. She damn near got you killed, and all you can think about is the way her lips moved while she sang, and the way her dress fit her."
Stupid, useless thoughts. Still, the dress had fit her well. There was no denying that. He was still thinking about the singer when they rounded a corner and came upon a procession of grim-faced men and women in the red and black uniforms that had become all too familiar in the past months. Alesh peered over the heads of the gathered crowd and gasped in surprise as he recognized the leader of the procession. The man wore a rich crimson tunic with a sable cloak and trousers, and he looked straight forward determinedly, as if he was prepared to walk through anyone or anything stupid enough to get in his way. Phelan Parr, the leader of the Redeemers.
"Alesh," Corin asked, "are you okay? You look as if you've seen your own ghost."
"I knew he looked familiar,"
Alesh breathed.
"What are you talking about?"
Corin asked, grabbing one of his arms.
"Alesh, what's wrong?"
"But what would Kale be doing in the poor quarter with the leader of the Redeemers unless—"
"Corin," he said,
his eyes never leaving the thin man,
"I'm sorry, but I have to go."
"You have to go? Why? Alesh, is everything okay?"
He shook his head. "I don't think so, Cor. I really don't."
He forced his gaze away from Phelan Parr and turned to his friend.
"Something's not right. I have to talk to the Chosen. I have to—"
He swallowed hard.
"Corin, can you do me a favor? Abigail and Sonia have gone to the market square for the show. Could you go and get them, make sure they're safe?"
His friend frowned.
"Of course they're safe.
Alesh grabbed his friend by the shoulder, and Corin must have seen something in his expression, because he stopped mid-sentence.
"Please, Corin, I've got a really bad feeling."
The big guard opened his mouth to speak, then shut it again. Finally, he nodded.
"All right, I will. But you're going to tell me what all of this is about later."
"Of course,"
Alesh said, nodding impatiently.
"I'll tell you all about it."
His friend started to say something else, but Alesh was already gone, pushing his way through the crowd, cursing at how slow he was forced to move. He wasn't sure why, but he got the distinct feeling that time was running out. If that was, it wasn't out already. Chapter 14. By the time he made it to the castle, Alesh's fear had taken such hold of him that he was half surprised not to find a pile of burning rubble where it had once stood. He had spent the last hour and a half trying to tell himself that everything was okay, that he was overreacting, but every time he did, he remembered the Chosen's face from the night before, old and haggard, the desperate, almost lost look he'd seen in his eyes, and the lie showed itself for what it was. As he ran, ignoring the sharp ache in his side, he became more and more certain that something was terribly wrong, had, in fact, been wrong for some time now. He rushed through the servants' hallways, oblivious of the surprised castle workers and furious nobles he shouldered past in his haste. He stopped by his room first, wanting to grab the small, bloody fisherman's knife that he'd hid under his bed to show Ahriman, but he was shocked to see that it wasn't there. Someone had taken it. His sense of foreboding growing with each passing second, Alesh left his room and hurried through the castle toward Ahriman's chambers. As he approached the Chosen's quarters, he finally allowed himself to slow, and he glanced around the empty hallway with surprise. Apparently, Ahriman had ended his prayers quicker than normal. If he'd still been in his rooms, there would have been guards posted at his doors, but there was no one, and the hallway was silent. He started to turn away, thinking to search for the Chosen elsewhere, but stopped as he noticed that the door to Ahriman's personal quarters stood ajar. Apparently some of the servants had taken the opportunity afforded by the Chosen's absence to clean. Alesh breathed a sigh of relief. They would know where to find him.
"Excuse me,"
he began, as he stepped inside the door, then froze in shock. The first thing he noticed was the blood. It covered the walls, the floor, and the white sheets of the bed like red paint. A red brighter than he would have thought possible.
"A man could never hold so much," he thought wildly. "Not a dozen men."
He wanted, needed, to close his eyes against the terrible sight, close them before it was too late, but he could not, and against his wishes, his gaze shifted to the figure lying on the bed. Lord Ahriman, High Priest of Armadan, ruler of Valeria and leader of the Six, was still dressed in the white robes he'd worn the day before, though they were barely recognizable. The normally clean, immaculate cloth was covered in gore and blood, so thick that it looked as if the Chosen had waded in a river of it. The old man's face was peaceful, as if he were merely sleeping, his blue gaze locked on the ceiling as if even now he sought his god. Alesh prayed that he'd found him, for he was not sleeping, and whatever the outcome of his searching, it was over now. The large, gaping hole that had been ripped in his chest was proof of that. His heart, he thought, too shocked to move, his hands trembling at his side. They ate his heart. A noise came from behind him, and he spun, his breath catching with terror. The sound had come from the Chosen's personal sanctuary, a place where no one, not even a servant, was allowed to enter. The door was closed.
"It's them," he thought in a panic. "It's the Nightlings. They've killed the Chosen, and now they're going to kill me, too."
"It can't be,"
some desperate part of his mind insisted. Everyone knew the creatures only came out at night, that they were powerless in the day. Just like everyone knew that no Nightwalker could ever slay Ahriman, Alesh thought.
Hello?
He'd meant to ask the question aloud, but his voice came out in a raspy whisper. He told himself he should run, needed to run. After all, someone had to tell the castle guards what had happened. But even as he thought this, he found himself moving toward the small, unadorned door, felt his hand grasping its latch, and in another moment,
The door was swinging open. He winced in anticipation of the sharp claws and fangs that were certainly about to tear into him, at the evil that was waiting on the other side. But the door pulled wide, and it was not a nightling waiting on him, but Kael, the Chosen's apprentice. The nobleman stood, facing the altar above which hung a golden torch, the sacred symbol of Amidan.
"Kael?"
Alesh asked, shocked and more than a little outraged to find the apprentice here, in Olliman's personal sanctuary. The nobleman jerked around in surprise and looked at Alesh. After a moment, the surprise expression faded, and he nodded once, solemnly.
"So,"
Kael said, his voice hoarse, as if he'd been shouting or crying.
"You have seen it. You know."
"Know what?" Alesh asked, his thoughts scattered at unexpectedly finding Kael here.
"Our master. He is dead."
Thoughts tumbled through Alesh's head too quickly to grasp, but he finally managed to hold on to one.
"I saw you,"
Alesh said, "in the poor district with Phelan Parr." Another surprised look from the nobleman, and was that guilt? But it was gone in another moment. Kael nodded.
"I had not meant for you to see that."
Alesh braced, expecting the nobleman to attack him at any moment. If he'd been plotting with Phelan Parr to overthrow the Chosen, he wouldn't, couldn't leave any witnesses. But Kael only stood there, his expression one of a deep, terrible grief.
"I was trying to make a deal with him, Alesh, hoping that I could get him to see reason, to come back to Amidan's grace, or at the very least, to take his redeemers elsewhere."
Alesh frowned, not just at the nobleman's words, but also at his use of Alesh's name. He could not recall him ever having used it before. Arsehole, servant, peasant, sure. But his name? That doesn't make any sense. Chosen Olliman tried to negotiate with Phelan Parr. The man would hear none of it. What hopes could you have possibly had of doing better? The nobleman sighed.
"None, I'm sure. But I thought, well, that if I somehow did manage to come to some terms with Phelan Parr and his redeemers, perhaps the Chosen would deem me ready to take his place."
Alesh considered this. That last did sound like the Kael he knew, ambitious, hungry for power. Still, something was bothering him. "Why are you here?" Their training session hadn't been scheduled until later in the day, and the Kael he knew would have been spending his time chasing after women or power, maybe a peasant whose life he could make a living hell, not coming to check on the Chosen without being called. Kael shrugged sadly.
"I came to tell him that Phelan Parr has agreed to meet with him." I know," he said, holding up a hand to forestall Alesh's arguments. "It probably wouldn't have done any good, but I had to try. You've no idea what it's like, Alesh, having parents that always expect more than you can give, having a father who looks at you as a failure no matter what you do."
The Chosen's apprentice paused, his teeth clenching, as if in the grip of some great emotion, and Alesh saw a tear run its way down the nobleman's face.
"I thought that, maybe, if Olliman stepped down and made me the new Chosen, maybe I could make him proud."
"You're right," Alesh thought. "I don't know what it's like at all. I don't even know what it's like to have a father." He glanced back at the room in which the Chosen lay dead. "At least, not any more." With that thought, he felt his own throat clench with sadness, and despite the fact that yesterday he would have thought it impossible, he felt compassion for the nobleman.
"Then how?"
he asked. He wasn't able to say more, but apparently Kael understood his meaning, because he shook his head sadly.
"Nightwalkers, Alesh. How else?"
He took a step toward him, and Alesh gasped. He hadn't noticed before because of the low light of the altar room, but Kael was covered in blood, almost as much as Olliman himself. The nobleman noticed his stare and nodded sadly.
I tried to save him, but I was too late."
He gestured to the altar.
"I've been praying to Amidan, Alesh, praying that he grant me the strength, the wisdom, to be worthy of taking Olliman's place."
"'His place?'
Valesh asked, his grief making him incapable of understanding what the nobleman was saying. The dark-haired man nodded. "'I know, brother,' he said, coming up to Valesh and placing a blood-stained hand on his shoulder. "'Our master's death is more than any man should have to bear, and I fear Ulrika will suffer for it.' He sighed then, and it was the sigh of a man who has taken up a great burden that he does not expect to put down soon. "'I am no Olliman. His wisdom, his kindness, will be sorely missed in the days to come, but I will do my best, that I promise you.' Kale gripped his shoulder firmly for a moment, then walked to the bed and knelt beside where the Chosen lay, the look of grief and pain on his face so great that Alesh was suddenly ashamed of every cruel thought he'd ever had about the nobleman. The Chosen's apprentice grasped Olliman's lifeless hand, where it hung loose over the side of the bed, and kissed it tenderly, heedless of the blood that covered it. "'I am sorry I was not here, Master,' he whispered, though not so quietly that Alesh couldn't hear. "'I will try to make you proud.' Alesh stood, his feet rooted to the spot, oblivious of the hot tears that wound their way down his face. After a moment, Kale rose. "'He was a leader to us all,' he said. "'I'll go and tell the others.' Then he turned and left. "'No,' Alesh thought. "'He was more than that.' When Kale was gone, he walked to the other side of the bed and stared into the Chosen's eyes, the eyes that had known him the second they'd seen him, had tested and measured and loved. He let out a choked sob and fell to his knees, his legs suddenly too weak to hold him.
"'How?'
he asked those blank, lifeless orbs.
"'Why?'
he asked, but this time not of the body of his master, but of the god who had let him die.
"'He followed your tenets,'
he hissed, anger and hate mixing in his words.
"'He did everything you asked of him. If you can't protect him, if you couldn't protect my parents, then what good are you?'
There was no answer. But then there never was. Armidan, it seemed, if he existed at all, cared nothing for the people who wasted their lives following his teachings.
"'Damn you!'
Alesh growled, his hands knotting into fists at his sides.
"'Damn you!'
He shook with the hate, the rage that roared through him. But as quickly as it had come, his anger vanished, leaving behind a grief too great to bear. He closed his eyes and wept, and it wasn't the man he was whose tears fell onto the bed linens, but the boy from so long ago, the boy who was left lying broken among the wreckage of his life, broken and alone. After a time, he rose and turned to go, but a glint of light caught his eye. He turned back and saw that something was gripped in the Chosen's hand. Gently, he unfurled the cold fingers and saw that it was the Chosen's medallion, the symbol of the High Priests of Armidan, a golden torch inlaid in a golden circle, its fire burning a brilliant white. Clutching the medallion by its chain so tightly that it hurt, he walked back into the altar room. A small window sat at the back of the sanctuary, and he made his way toward it. He reached for the latch, but found that it was already unhooked, and that the glass pane had not been secured into its fastening, but left loose. He pushed it the rest of the way open and stared out at the city below, full of people who believed that the Lord of Light would protect them, would keep them safe.
"'Not me,'
he said, his voice shaking with barely contained fury.
"'Never again!'
He stared at the amulet in his hand for a moment, then dropped it out the window, watching as it fell out of sight. Then he turned and walked away. Chapter 15 Alesh wandered the castle hallways aimlessly. He felt as if there were things he should be doing, but he couldn't seem to bring himself to care. The news of the Chosen's death spread through the castle ahead of him, and the wails and weeping of the castle's servants seemed to surround him, echoing off of the walls, as if he trod through the underworld itself, each step carrying him past the tortured screams of the dead and the dying. He didn't know how long he wandered that terrible landscape, a revenant living in memories of the past, oblivious of its present. But eventually he turned a corner and saw a pale-faced noblewoman leading her young daughter by the hand as they hurried through the castle, porters carrying their bags behind them. Something about the image pulled him out of his stupor,